Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. But stand by now for the World View. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. There's so much to get to this week. Well, I'm not even sure where to start, but I think I'll start with Barry Ho's vacations. A lot of people are upset that Barack Hussein Obama and his entourage are on their, I don't know, fifth, sixth vacation this year. And it's only the eighth month of the year. But, well, I should say, a lot of conservative pundits and talking heads are quite upset at Barry for taking so many vacations. But I need to remind you, you must keep in mind, Barry needs a vacation. You know he's got to work harder than any president in history because he's a minority. And minorities have to work harder all the time because the man is keeping them down. You see, Barry's being kept down by the man, so he needs a vacation. So he's out on Martha's Vineyard, and, well, maybe he'll do us less harm when he's on vacation. We may want to celebrate when Barry goes on vacation, because he's not actively destroying the nation, perhaps. Anyway, that's just my two cents on that topic. Now, there's another controversy in the news. Apparently, the ACLU is upset.
No.
The ACLU is upset, yes. Shock of all shocks. The full body scanners at certain airports, well, some people just refuse to go through them because they don't want Janet Napolitano looking at their privates and all that, you know? I mean, I can understand people not wanting to go through the full body scanner. Anyway, the ACLU said, well, there's been a new pat-down developed called the Palms Forward pat-down that TSA officials have been instructed to use at the airports, and the ACLU is quite upset, threatening to file a lawsuit. But from what we understand, this is late news just coming into the Worldview studio. ACLU lawyers have agreed to drop the threat of a lawsuit if they are allowed to perform the Hands Forward pat-down procedure on any underage boys, at which point the judge had the men immediately removed from the courtroom. Anyway, that's what we've got going on. I've got some other... Well, let's dive in here to the news because it's been a busy week, and I don't want to keep you on the edge of your seat. We're going to start over in London, and this is... well, it's disturbing. From the Daily Mail in London, the lead singer of a British pop band has committed suicide during a music festival in Belgium. Charles Haddon, frontman for the electro-pop trio Oh et le Swimming Pool, it's called Oh et le Swimming Pool, leapt to his death from a telecommunications mast behind the main stage at the Pukkelpop Festival in Belgium. Just 22 years old, lead singer of a relatively successful electro-pop trio, whatever that means. He took more than a stage dive, frankly. He plunged to his death to a parking lot below the telecommunications mast and was pronounced dead. Well, right there in the parking lot. Man, that must have been a real lousy set. Well, either that, or we have an example of yet another young person raised in the secular humanist model who has discovered that his life is meaningless. And he has leapt to his death. You know, my pastor predicted some years ago that it was just a matter of time before some entertainer either committed suicide or was murdered on stage. And we're getting closer and closer every day. Here we've got Charles Haddon from Oh Es Le Swimming Pool. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Hadn't ever heard of this band, to be honest with you. All right, speaking of bands, we must give a review of the Rush Time Machine concert that we took in at Red Rocks, I would have to say it was the best overall concert performance of a rock and roll genre that I have ever seen. And I think my extremely attractive audio engineer agrees. Am I correct? And you're not even a Rush fan, are you? She's not even a Rush fan, but she came out of there saying, wow. It was all their greatest hits, every song you ever wanted them to play at a concert, but they just kept laying that new stuff on you. Well, this made up for all that. And the only time they actually fell apart, oddly enough, was during Tom Sawyer, which is, I mean, that's the song that you've just heard too much of. I'm sure they sit backstage and they say, you know, if we knew we would have had to play this for our whole lives, we might have written something else, eh? That's the one song that they, anyway, but they only fell apart for about a fraction of a 30th of a second. And then they pulled it right back together. It was amazing. The drummer, Neil, he started to get a little off. And the bass player jumped off the keyboards and ran back right in front of the drummer and started banging away with his neck of his bass and pulled it all back together. And the rest was flawless. Truly a great show. But the one sad note is the number of young white males here in the Denver metro area who are suffering with glaucoma, rheumatoid arthritis, HIV, AIDS. I mean, the crowd was literally full of these poor suffering souls, but at least they brought their medication. We were walking up to the stage area through the rocks there at Red Rocks, beautiful venue, and my extremely attractive audio engineer said, I smell a skunk. I said, that's not a skunk, that's a doctor. He's bringing medications for all these poor sad souls. Anyway, but a great show it was. And the good thing about being at a Rush concert is that the audience is pretty old, pretty male. In fact, I think the band commented that they had counted nearly 90 women in a crowd of about 15,000, and they said that may have been a record for a Rush concert. But anyway, everyone's very, let's just say they're a little more staid than your typical rock and roll crowd, and nobody offered us any medical marijuana or otherwise there at the show. So, but it was sad to see. All right, now let's back to the news of the day. Now, serious stuff here, folks. WikiLeaks, you've all heard of it. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has vowed, he said last week he was going to publish his last batch of secret documents on the Afghan war in a couple of weeks, and the Pentagon claims that releasing these documents would put, quote, further lives at risk, unquote, according to the Pentagon. And I just want to know, have there been lives lost, or have there been agents compromised due to this skinny little queer who's over there downloading and releasing classified documents? I haven't heard about it. If anyone's aware of any agents or any allies there in the Iraq-Afghanistan theater who've been compromised, I want to know. Because if this skinny, pale little queer in his mom's basement has caused anyone's life to be put in danger, I want him arrested and put to death. Summarily. A summary execution. This is war, after all, is it not? Oh, that's right, it's not. It's really not. An update on Julian Assange. Stockholm, Sweden. Swedish authorities say they have revoked an arrest warrant that had alleged rape against Julian. They say he's no longer wanted and not suspected of rape, which means at some point he was wanted and was suspected of rape, but for whatever reason, he's no longer wanted. The arrest warrant, filed last Friday, had also mentioned a molestation charge, but molestation is not a crime punishable in Sweden. No surprise there. Anyway, so yeah, this skinny little twerp should be arrested and possibly summarily executed, depending on who he's compromised in the field. But let's move out of the war file, because the war file is depressing. Let's go to the justice file. A little bit of good news. The leader of a former gang of Houston teenagers who assaulted and murdered two young girls 17 years ago was executed last Tuesday, as a matter of fact, in Texas. Peter Anthony Cantu, 35 years old. It's been half his life since he murdered these people. Anyway, Peter Anthony Cantu took a single deep breath before slipping into unconsciousness. It's like a Pink Floyd song, executions these days. Anyway, he slipped off into unconsciousness as the relatives watched him. This is according to an AP story. Relatives looked through a window just a few feet from him. Asked by the warden if he had any last statement, Cantu replied no. Two of Cantu's fellow gang members were put to death earlier, Derek O'Brien in 06, Jose Medellin in 2008. So now we know what Peter Anthony Cantu went through, right? It was like listening to a Pink Floyd song and he floated off into unconsciousness. Well, listen to what happened to Jennifer and Elizabeth, 14 and 16 years old. This is 17 years ago. They took a shortcut home after leaving a party near where gang members were hanging out drinking and initiating a new member. The group of thugs spotted the girls and grabbed one of them, who screamed. What happened next is described by Harris County prosecutors as a feeding frenzy. The girls were assaulted for more than an hour. They were kicked. They had their teeth knocked out, their hair pulled out, their ribs were broken. A red nylon belt was pulled so tightly around one of the girls' necks that the belt snapped, and shoelaces were then used to strangle the other girl to death in a violent orgy of bloodshed. But Peter Anthony Cantu took a single deep breath before slipping into peaceful unconsciousness. Now, the good thing is that immediately after the Pink Floyd song ended for Mr. Cantu, he met Jesus Christ, who I'm certain brutalized him and continues to brutalize him to this very moment. Praise the Lord. One of the victim's father, Jennifer Ertman's father, Randy, according to the AP, he said before Cantu was put to death, he was asked about Cantu's apologies that had been given in prison prior to his execution. And Randy said the apologies meant nothing to him, that it was too late for apologies. He said if the death penalty was intended as a deterrent, all five members of this gang who had been sentenced to die should have been hanged from trees outside Houston City Hall years ago. That's the voice of a father whose daughter was taken from him brutally 17 years ago. And I just want to say to Randy Ertman, you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right, Dad. Disgusting, the state of justice. Disgusting! All right. Let's move on from the justice file. We'll go back to the war file from Washington, D.C. The Obama administration has persuaded Israel that it would take roughly a year for Iran to complete what they're calling its dash for a nuclear weapon. They believe the assessment has dimmed the prospect that Israel would preemptively strike Iran within the next year. And so we all heard the stories about Bashir, the nuclear reactor, being fueled by the Russians, and it's being fueled now. So now bombing Bashir becomes rather complicated, or perhaps impossible. And I've just got to hope that the Jews know something I don't. And I've got to hope that Obama doesn't have the Jews right where he wants them, basically buffaloed into believing that Iran doesn't present an immediate threat. Back to the New York Times article. Israeli intelligence officials had argued that Iran could complete such a race for the bomb in months, but American intelligence believes that the timeline is longer. One Gary Seymour, President Obama's top advisor on nuclear issues, says, quote, "We think that they have roughly a year dash time. And a year is a very long time," unquote. It is, Gary? A year is a long time? I don't know where you get that. If someone's about to create a bomb that can vaporize the cities of neighboring states, a year doesn't seem like a long time. I'm thinking we should have started bombing maybe a year ago. But American intelligence thinks a year is a long period of time. What else does the New York Times have to say? American officials said new intelligence information was being fed into a long-delayed national intelligence estimate on Iran's nuclear program. Great, great. Another long-delayed intelligence estimate. That makes me feel a lot better. And I'm sure it makes the Israelis, it helps them to sleep better at night. You know, folks, I'm afraid that just as passage of health care reform, so-called, marked a milestone in the end of America, so the fueling of Bashir, it marks a similar dark event in the eventual destruction of the modern state of Israel. And it's a sad day. It's been a sad week to watch as the Western powers fiddled while Bashir begins to burn. Got to come out of the justice file. Thank you, boys. Go backstage. Have a Perrier. Take a break. All right. We've got to come out of the war file because it's just too depressing. And my next story is from the justice file. I can't take it. So let's go to something else. I want to talk about disposable toilet seats. You heard me right. Don't laugh. This is a serious topic. I discovered disposable toilet seats at the Home Depot, and I've got to say, I think it marks perhaps the high water mark of Western civilization. You install a couple of studs onto your toilet seat, and then this disposable padded unit installs. You just turn a couple of little handles, and it cranks on there, solid as the day is long. And what, you're going to use it for 6 months, maybe a year? You're going to toss it out, put a new one in like a civilized human being. I think it's a brilliant idea. But there's a fly in the ointment in that when you're at the Home Depot, you cannot calibrate the tipping point of the toilet seat before you bring it home and install it on your particular toilet. So the disposable toilet seat that has recently been installed here at the McBurney compound, it won't stay up by itself, and it tips. And now I'm the only one in the house who has to deal with it, because I'm the only boy. I never realized how having only one hand would be so inconvenient. And then you forget, you're washing your hands, it's 9:30 at night, the kids have just nodded off to sleep, and the toilet seat goes, bam! Anyway, so if we can just figure out a way to calibrate the toilet seat on your particular toilet before you actually have to take possession of it, maybe they could make two or three different styles. One that tips at this degree and one that tips. Anyway.
Most people don't have those padded.
Most people don't have the padded toilet seat? Oh, I can never go back.
I know. Oh,
the padded toilet seat is another mark of true civilization. But anyway, so it's only the tipping thing, and I'm hoping over time that it will get better, but I have a feeling that it won't. I really don't. Anyway, should we go back to the news? Because I don't know if I can take it. Let's jump back into the justice file because I have my duty. I know that you are expecting hard news from the Weekly Worldview, and I'm here to give them to you. This is from the Associated Press, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. An Oklahoma death row inmate's execution was stayed for the third time in less than 3 months last week after his defense attorney objected to plans to substitute a particular drug in his lethal injection. Yeah. They're worried about, I don't know what they're worried about. Let's read on. U.S. District Judge Stephen Friot issued the stay just hours before Jeffrey David Matthews was to be executed for the murder of his 77-year-old great-uncle, Otis, during a 1994 robbery. Do you notice a pattern here? That's 16 years ago. 1994, he murders someone. 16 years later, they're worried about which particular drug they're going to inject into the bastard to kill him. Well, rather than using sodium thiopental, officials wanted instead to use Brevetol, Officials were concerned that the original drug on hand may have expired. Expired? Isn't that the whole point of the operation? Governor Brad Henry already had granted two stays, giving defense attorneys time to investigate their clients' claims of innocence and review fingerprint evidence. I mean, hey, it's already been 15 years. What's another? Nobody can even remember the poor guy who was murdered. Half his family has died of old age. Anyway, the judge's order has stayed Matthew's execution another 60 days. Now, it's been 16 years. What's another 16 days? And we can make sure we have some high-quality drugs on hand to make sure that we don't make the fella sick in the 9 seconds between the time we inject it and the time when he sails off into the great beyond to meet his judge and maker. I guess that's why he's a judge and I'm not. He sees the big picture. All right. More from the war file. Do I want to do this? This is... All right, from the war file, from Washington, D.C., an Associated Press story, the CIA is opening a counter-proliferation center to combat the spread of dangerous weapons and technology. Now, I laugh because otherwise I would cry, but that sounds about right for the CIA and American intelligence and the American government overall for the past, I don't know, 30 years. I mean, once the horse has left the barn, they decide they should look into analyzing the construction of a door. Someone might want to let the CIA know that Iran has the centrifuges and now they're getting the nuclear fuel. But worry not. Paul Brennan, a senior analyst at the Institute for Science and International Security, no doubt a patronage job for Mr. Brennan. He said the Iranian Bashir nuclear power plant site is not a proliferation threat since Iran does not have the ability to reprocess the spent fuel into nuclear weapons-grade material. And he reminds us that the site will be watched closely. They'll be watching for things like a heat signature on radar images. They'll also be tracking as much as they can from satellite imagery, vapor leaving the cooling towers, which could indicate whether the Iranians are trying to siphon anything off. So these morons think that we're going to be able to watch Iran with satellites. And they're just now starting to... They're opening a counter-proliferation center. Unbelievable. Folks, I just want to reiterate. Just be prepared. And I don't mean buy stock food and build a bomb shelter. I mean be prepared to meet your maker. Because the greatest civilizations in all of history have disappeared in a moment of time. And America may be the greatest civilization ever achieved. The West may be the greatest and most powerful physical military might on the planet. But in a moment of time, that could all slip away. And perhaps we're in that generation for America. All right, I don't want to depress you people anymore. Can I find something? I'm going to have to dig down. Well, maybe I'll just... You know what? I'm going to give it to you unvarnished. This is the way the news came to me. I'm going to read it to you. Dateline Las Vegas, Nevada. Police are looking for a female bandit who ambushed and dragged a 95-year-old woman through a grocery store parking lot. The attack happened in broad daylight at a grocery store. A friend of the victim was quoted as saying, "What happened to respecting your elderly? What happened to taking care of the elderly? Has it gotten that bad that we have to jump a 95-year-old woman?" Well, it hasn't gotten that bad for some of us, but some amongst us are that bad. And they're running wild. Let's see. This is from KTNV-TV. In Las Vegas, the 95-year-old's hip was broken during the attack. She's undergone surgery. The prognosis does not look good. She remains bedridden at a hospital at last report. Awful, awful. Another friend of the victim said of the perpetrators, which, by the way, were two females, Another friend of the victim said of the perpetrators, "I think they're dirty and need to be beaten and strung up." All right, so there is some hope and some clear thinking there in Las Vegas. It's got to be a matter of time before civilized Americans lash back at the criminals and the justice system who've produced them. I mean, how long is it going to take? How many 95-year-olds have to be dragged through parking lots? How many 16-year-olds have to have their teeth kicked out and be strangled to death before the fathers of America stand up and say, "We will not tolerate this anymore, not for our daughters, not for our mothers, not for our grandmothers. You people in your black robes, it's time for a changing of the guard, one way or the other." I say that as a dad. I'm just a dad. I'm a Christian, I'm an American, and I'm free. And I will not mess around when it comes to mine. And I hope you other dads feel the same way out there. It's called righteous indignation. All right. More from the justice file. Okay, here we get into the meat of it here, folks. All right. Now, for some of you who may be squeamish, I'm going to warn you, what follows is graphic. Kabul, Afghanistan, from CNN, the Taliban stoned to death a man and a woman in northern Afghanistan for allegedly having an affair. The pair was accused of having an illicit relationship. The woman was engaged, the man was married to another woman, and they were stoned to death in Afghanistan by the Taliban, who is our sworn enemy. And they are Muslim, as you well know. Now, those of you in the audience who've listened to the show, even in its first iteration back 10, 12 years ago, you know that I consider adultery a crime. And I don't just do that because I'm some kind of theologian or... Well, it's what the Bible says. Says adultery is a crime. Says murder is a crime. Theft is a crime. Perjury is a crime. Kidnapping is a crime. And as far as I can tell, these are crimes... Well, the punishments were laid out in the Bible. And as far as I can tell in Scripture, they were never rescinded. As far as the basis of a criminal justice system for a nation... These are crimes that eternally were crimes and always will be crimes, and God laid out the punishment in the Bible. And you can go and look into it. Now, me personally, if the government would simply agree to make adultery a crime, I would be willing to negotiate on the punishment. I would. I'd be willing to start there. Let's at least recriminalize what is a crime. You see, the government can say something is not a crime, but that doesn't dilute the effects of that crime on the culture. In fact, it redirects and multiplies the ravenous effects of this criminal activity, and adultery is a crime. Do I agree with the Taliban that the two should have been dragged out and stoned to death? I don't agree with the Taliban because I don't trust their sense of justice. But let's go... Because I want to talk a little bit about the Bible on this. But let's go to Saudi Arabia. A Saudi man convicted of paralyzing a fellow countryman in a cleaver attack, that's a meat cleaver, is being threatened with having his spinal cord cut in a judicially endorsed punishment. Yeah, now the desert kingdom there of Saudi Arabia enforces Islamic law and on rare occasions metes out punishments based on the ancient code of an eye for an eye. Now, is that an Islamic code? Now, when did Islam come about? I believe it was around 666 AD. If I'm not mistaken, it's right around there. I find this interesting because the Saudi government occasionally metes out punishment based on this eye for an eye code. Occasionally. And you see, justice can't be occasional. That tells me that the Saudi government is corrupt, like every other human government, but more so. This from the Daily Mail in London. The punishment, according to reporters, the punishment is decided by the victim and or the victim's family, and it can be waived if the victim chooses to accept some payment instead of retributions. They call it blood money. You can take the blood money, or you can inflict punishment on your attacker. Now, the same also applies in capital cases such as murder. There have been several instances over the years where a convicted murderer's life has been spared at the 11th hour when his victim's family has eventually decided to show mercy and, well, take the money instead. In this instance, though, the victim, Abdul Aziz Al-Muta'ari, is insisting that his attacker suffer the same crippling injury that he was dealt. Now, Abdul Aziz was hacked with a meat cleaver, his spine severed, and he is now crippled. And he's saying he wants his attacker to be crippled, and the judge is shopping it around to a hospital, trying to find a hospital that will do this, and he's having some difficulty. But you all know that I'm a staunch advocate of the death penalty, and I'm a staunch advocate of God's criminal justice system. And I want to remind everyone that Islam, like so many pagan religions, is merely a perversion of the original religion. And let's go, and let's go to Leviticus, as a matter of fact. The 24th chapter, 17th verse, God says, "Whoever kills a man shall surely be put to death. Whoever kills an animal shall make it good, animal for animal. If a man causes disfigurement of his neighbor, as he has done, so shall it be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, as he has caused disfigurement of a man, so it shall be done to him. And whoever kills an animal shall restore it, but whoever kills a man shall be put to death." So here we see God's, not only his eternal command against murder, but his eternal decree as to the punishment for murder. And we see here that the scripture talks about animals, it talks about disfigurement, it talks about murder. Leviticus 24, fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. However you have caused disfigurement, so it shall be done to you. That's all bracketed. It starts in Leviticus 24, 17, whoever kills a man shall be surely be put to death. And it ends in the 21st verse, whoever kills a man shall be put to death. So as far as I can tell in Scripture, none of these punishments were ever rescinded here in the age of grace for criminals. So Islam may be a perversion. I shouldn't say maybe. Islam is a perversion and a corruption of real religion, of the Creator God's religion and commandments. But just because Islam has perverted justice, ask yourself this. Has Western Christendom perverted it just as bad, perhaps even worse? And if so, do we throw the baby out with the bathwater? I am Doug McBurney, your humble host, and I am back. And all I'm trying to say, folks, is don't throw out justice just because a satanic religion corrupts justice. And don't let the liberals lie to you that if you are for justice, you equal the Taliban. It's not the case. It is not the case. And if someone hurts mine in my family, it would be my desire to put my own hands on that person and inflict justice upon them. And I believe that is righteous. So, don't shrink from the argument. Just because these pagans, whether they're in the ACLU or the Taliban, have corrupted justice and inflicted death and murder upon all of mankind, that doesn't mean we Christians can't stand up and say, wait a minute, we have the answer. You sit down and shut up. We have the answer. All right. Back to the domestic tranquility file from CNN. The bodies of two children trapped inside a car submerged in the Edisto River in South Carolina have been recovered, and their mother has been arrested for their murder. Divers discovered the bodies, which were taken from the car and sent to the coroner for autopsies. The 29-year-old mother was arrested. She had described the incident as an accident, but has since confessed to murdering her own children, strapping them in a car, rolling the car into a river. There was a time in this nation when a story like that shocked the nation, and the entire nation focused on that story for days. There was a time. But now, with the corruption and perversion of justice, the redirection and infliction of death and murder and destruction upon the population is so ubiquitous that there's no way we can focus on these stories for more than a few minutes. And it's justice, folks. It's all about justice. Dateline Rosemead, California. The 14-year-old granddaughter of a slain Southern California couple and her 21-year-old boyfriend have been charged with murder after authorities tracked them down in Texas. Sofia Cristo and Rodolfo Lopez were arrested in Horizon City, Texas, 2 days after Jack Del Benzer and his wife Susan were found stabbed to death in their home in Rosemead. Prosecutors haven't decided whether to seek the death penalty, proving that they are unqualified to take that decision or to even consider it. From the Justice File, more from the Justice File, from AP, campaign fundraising for elections to the nation's top state courts has doubled to more than $200 million over the last decade. That's right. These are judges trying to get elected. Their election spending has doubled over the past decade. Corporations and trial lawyers, according to the AP, have millions and millions of dollars at stake, and they want to influence the outcome of judicial decisions. Ex-Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor has written, quote, "This crisis of confidence in the impartiality of the judiciary is real and growing. Left unaddressed, the perception that justice is for sale will undermine the rule of law that courts are supposed to uphold." Unquote. You know, I've been saying this for 10 years. Sandra Day O'Connor is, she's considered to be someone. I'm just a guy with a talk show, and I'm smart enough to realize what's going on, Sandy. Anyway, this reminds me, I saw on television here in Denver, Colorado, within the last 10 days or so, they blew up and destroyed the old Denver County Justice Center. Now, the building itself was less than 30 years old. And I don't know, but I always got the impression that when you build a building, I mean, 30 years seems like a pretty short lifespan for a building. But here in Denver, we decided that the Justice Center needs to be updated. So they brought in the demolition crew and they blew it up and they showed it on TV and you saw the Justice Center crashing to the ground in a heap of rubble and dust. Made me wonder if perhaps they were getting rid of evidence. Perhaps. Just a suspicion I have, but I'm generally paranoid. But anyway, the new Justice Center is going to be built. You know, I'm sure the mayor went in there with his gold spade and turned over some dirt and began construction of the new Denver Justice Center, the latest pagan temple to be erected in this grossly disgusting pagan heathen town. I mean, people tell us California is liberal. People say, oh, San Francisco, it must be horrible to live there. Well, come to Denver. You have to scrape it off your shoe out here. It's disgusting. Faggots and deviants, molesters and all other sort of undesirables hold public office, frankly, primarily. The ones that aren't wandering the street aimlessly, babbling, drooling into their paper sack. They hold public office. Anyway, I looked at my wife, because they showed a picture of the new Justice Center on television. And I looked at my wife and I said, that's just a real beautiful building, but it's a shame at what it's going to house. And she said, yeah. She said, it's going to be a beautiful building, but it's going to be filled with bad people. I said, yeah, it's going to be filled with bad people, lawyers, and worse. And she thought for a second. She said, well, what could be worse than lawyers? And I said, well, some criminals are worse than lawyers. At least a few. Anyway, so that's the state of justice. Okay, I have to get back. Let me see here now. I've thrown my papers across the desk in disgust, so I have to find my way here. Oh, here we go. From the Justice File. From Point Blank, Texas. Claude Jones may have been wrongly executed for the 1989 slaying of a liquor store owner in this Texas town, but the AP says, no one says he's an angel. He was a lifelong criminal with a rap sheet that included a murder conviction for setting fire to a fellow inmate in a Kansas prison. But that hasn't stopped the Innocence Project and their ilk from trying to say that this fellow was wrongly executed. According to the AP article, there are new questions 10 years after Jones was executed about whether he actually killed 44-year-old Alan Hilzendogger while robbing the store. Now, there are no questions about the fella he set on fire in that prison in Kansas. There are no questions about that. But a judge has now ordered DNA testing on a strand of hair that prosecutors used to link Jones to the murder. And perhaps they'll find out that this one lone hair turns out not to be this fellow's, and yet another chink in the armor of a justice system that is frankly laying in a heap already. I mean, here's a fellow who should have been executed long before he did or did not murder this fellow at the liquor store. So no matter what the results of the DNA test are, this particular killer, Claude Jones, do you think up in heaven, at the judgment seat, that God's going to say, well, wait a minute, that hair, that DNA sample, that doesn't match. I'm going to have to let you off. Oh, wait a minute, you set that guy on fire in Kansas! Hellfire and brimstone. Anyway. Judgment Day is going to be pretty cool. I mean, it's going to be depressing in a lot of ways, but there's going to be a lot of fellas that I'm going to want to watch. Some of them, dastardly murderers like Claude Jones, and others, even worse, the judges and lawyers who defend and prosecute them. All right, now let's go to the politics file because we need some fun. This has been sort of a depressing show. I apologize to you folks. But the state of the nation and the world is what it is. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. All right. From Columbus, Ohio, and the Associated Press, despite criticism from Republicans and others, President Barack Barry Ho Hussein Obama said last Wednesday he has no regrets over the comments he made about the rights of Muslims to build an Islamic center near the former site of the World Trade Center there in New York. Barry said this right before he went on vacation there to Martha's Vineyard. Now, Senate Majority Harry Reid, so far, according to the AP, is the highest-profile Democrat to move away from Obama, saying through a spokesman, because Harry's scared of his own shadow these days. He doesn't make too many public statements. He said through a spokesman that he thinks the mosque should be built someplace else. And I agree. Should be built someplace like Mecca. Okay? House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has hedged on the controversy, and she's basically talked out of both sides of her mouth, as usual. She says it's okay, I forget her exact comment. She says it's okay to build the mosque down there as long as the morning after pill would continue to be distributed in that neighborhood. If she can get that assurance, she's fine with the mosque. All right. Now here we go. We need some comic relief. Well, former Vice President Albert Gore Jr. is calling for major rallies to protest congressional inaction on climate change. This is from the, I don't know if it's a magazine or a website, something called The Hill. The Hill of Beans reports that Al Gore is calling for major rallies to protest the inaction on climate change. I don't know, Al. It's kind of hard to get the troops fired up to protest inaction. I mean, usually action results in protest. But you know, Al's got to make a living, for crying out loud. He's got to make lemonade out of the lemons that have landed in his lap here in the past few weeks. Apparently on his personal blog, he had a headline that said, "The Movement We Need." The blog read, "Across the world, when politicians fail to take action to solve the climate crisis, people are taking action. It's my hope we see activism like this here in the United States, because there's a good chance, if there's a lot of protests and rallies, that I could probably meet some masseuses and others like that." All right. So Al Gore is calling the left to head out in the streets, and I am calling for the right to don't give up the ship. Wow, is that live? Man, these guys are good. All right. We're back. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we are in the politics file. And we're having some fun here as we round third and head for home. I don't want to leave you too depressed. So let's go to, well, one of the big controversies in conservatism over the past week or so. This is from an outfit that I was previously unaware of called Politics Daily, who I'm sure is a bunch of festering deviants. Just based on, well, let's just go to the story. Ann Coulter is going to speak at a meeting called HomoCon 2010. It's an event organized by the conservative gay group I know. How can you write a conservative gay group? I mean, does anyone know the meaning of the term oxymoron anymore? It's an event. It's called HomoCon. And I'm not making this up. Like, this is actually what they call it. HomoCon. HomoConfab. HomoConservatives. Homos conning Republicans. Homos offering large sacks of cash to Republicans and Ann Coulter. Anyway, it's called HomoCon 2010, organized by the deviant crowd, the deviant group Geo Proud. And it has caused conservative news outlet WorldNet Daily to drop her from speaking at one of its upcoming events. And I've got to applaud Joseph Farah. Can you join with me? There we go. Let's applaud Joseph Farah for dropping Ann Coulter, who I realized long ago, if she's not a straight up transgender, if that's not true, and I have not backed off from that suspicion, if she's not an actual transgender, she is certainly not a conservative. Anyway, Coulter has defended her decision to accept the invitation from the homosexuals, saying, "They hired me to give a speech, so I'm giving a speech. I speak to a lot of groups, and I do not endorse them. I speak at Harvard, and I certainly don't endorse their views," which I'm sure are very similar to the log cabin, geo-proud, homosexual, freak, deviant, phony baloney Republicans. Very similar to the people at Harvard. That should be a red flag, Ann. You might want to start considering vetting your speaking engagements. That's all. But I don't think she cares. Because according to Politics Daily, which is no doubt a bunch of festering deviants in someone's basement, according to Politics Daily, many young conservatives are defending Coulter's decision. Who are these conservatives? Well, let's see if we've heard of any of these people. S.E. Cupp, C-U-P-P, a conservative columnist. I never heard of the guy. He says, conservatism rightly seeks to keep the government out of our private lives. It's this assertion of privacy and freedom that the gay rights movement is essentially making. So he's comparing the homosexual movement basically to conservatism, and he's comparing them favorably. Well, I never heard of S.E. Cup, and hopefully his career as a conservative columnist is over, and he can start his career writing for Rolling Stone and Mother Jones or whatever the fags read. He can start that next week. Let's see, John Henke, a libertarian-leaning blogger, another fella, I never heard of the guy. He says, this is how institutions evolve and emerge with a let me try this again. This is how institutions evolve and emerge within a conservative culture. So he's basically saying, look, homosexuality, it's kind of like a herpes outbreak. It's going to evolve and emerge, and there's not much we can do about it. We should put some salve on it and take their money and treat them like normal people. John Henke. Never heard of the guy. He says also, in time, conservatives will argue that the positive impact that marriage has on the gay community is further evidence of the importance of the institution of marriage. Okay, he's a libertarian. I guess we'll give him a pass. He's not a conservative, never claimed to be a conservative. Well, the freaks writing for Politics Daily think he's a conservative. All right, is there anyone that I've heard of who's backing... who do we have here? The National Review's Dan Foster, he says that changing attitudes on homosexuality is largely generational. Here we go, Grover Norquist. Finally, someone I've at least heard of. I couldn't tell you who he is or what he does, but I have heard the name. He serves on the board of directors of Geo Proud, or is it Go Proud? Is it Go Proud? I'm not familiar with this particular group of Republican homosexuals. They're new to me. Go Proud? Okay, Go Proud. Grover Norquist is on the board. He's supposedly a conservative. And Right Wing News, which is a blog site run by John Hawkins, he has agreed to sponsor HomoCon. They're co-sponsors of the HomoCon Fab, often referred to as a pile. I know. Yeah. You have a flock of seagulls, a school of fish, a pile of homos. That's what's going on here. And they've been endorsed by Grover Norquist and Right Wing News. Ted Olson, who represented George W. Bush, remember back during Bush v. Gore? He recently said he thinks the government should stay out of the gay marriage debate, and Tucker Carlson is speaking at the event. And well, now that's no surprise at all. All right, well, yeah. Oh, no, he's speaking at another event hosted by the Log Cabin Republicans. Yeah, Tucker Carlson. Well, at least there was one in there that didn't surprise any of us. All right. Do I have anything to find? Look, Ann Coulter, if you people believe Ann Coulter is a conservative, all I've got to say is just wake up. Pay attention to what she says. Pay attention to who she hangs around with. I remember I started suspecting Ann Coulter was not a Republican. I'm sorry, not a conservative. She's obviously a Republican. I started to suspect she was not a conservative when backstage... at Politically Incorrect, back when Bill Maher had that TV show, backstage, the producers were telling me how much Ann Coulter and Bill got along, and they used to go out and party after the show. And I thought, okay, let's make a mental note to keep an eye on Ann Coulter, because anyone who can stand to be in the presence of Bill Maher for more than 10 minutes without Bill Maher physically demanding that you be thrown out of the room or physically attacking you, well, you're probably not a conservative. All right. Let's stay in the politics file. Here we have a job posting from the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Prisons in Duluth, Minnesota. This is a job posting up on an internet government job board. The Federal Bureau of Prisons will award a job to a responsible entity for providing the services of Native American medicine man to the inmate population. So they're going to hire a medicine man. The feds are going to hire a medicine man to go in and, I don't know. Sounds to me like the ultimate patronage job for some senator's alcoholic nephew who likes beads and feathers and peyote. Anyway, it's just bizarre. More from the politics file. We're running out of time, so I have to go quickly. Prince Charles, according to the Daily Mail in London, has told British families to take shorter showers to help protect the environment. He has a list of 20 lifestyle changes on his website for his new green campaign, Start. Start. You just need to start encouraging Europeans to take showers at all. I mean, that's why they call it Start. They're just going to start taking showers over in Europe. What a novel idea. The prince is urging people to give up baths in favor of short, refreshing 5-minute showers. His campaign website reads, "Snub the tub," and encourages everyone to replace one bath a week with a 5-minute shower. Yeah. And that's all Brits take is one bath a week. So replacing that with a 5-minute shower, I've got to admit, that would save a lot of water. But it wouldn't be as much as if they actually washed, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a week. Sarah Ferguson, Charles' former sister-in-law and mother-in-law of his nieces, has spoken of taking ice-cold baths on a daily basis to, quote, tackle her dark moods. I mean, this is the British royal family. We're going to take advice from these people? As for the Prince of Wales himself, he has not commented on whether he takes short showers or long showers or just continues the British tradition of going to France and buying some perfume and pouring it all over your body. And anyway, that's the Prince of Wales, him and Al Gore, right? Here we go, from the culture file. Jacksonville, Florida. The Navy, according to the Navy panel that reviewed the case of one Lisa Nowak, the Navy panel has said the Navy should discharge her. Now, you remember former astronaut Lisa Nowak? Remember she assaulted her romantic rival at the Orlando airport after she drove there from Houston in diapers? You remember? She was wearing a wig and a trench coat, and she tried to get in the woman's car and screamed at her and sprayed her with pepper spray. Well, 3 years later, 3 years later, the bureaucracy decides that she should be fired at some future time. We've made a decision. Now, this is the same federal government that's watching Iran and is trying to convince a Bibi Netanyahu that they're not a threat. And this is the same incompetent quota hires and patronage no-show bottom feeders who will soon determine how long your grandmother gets to live. Maybe we're lucky they're slow. Maybe we're lucky they're an inept bureaucracy. They won't kill grandma quite as fast. All right. And from West Point, New York, the culture file, a lesbian cadet has asked to resign from the U.S. Military Academy because she said she can no longer lie about her sexuality and she's troubled by the anti-gay attitudes of some normal people around her. Catherine Miller of Findlay, Ohio, also said she wants to fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a subject she said she was studying and writing about as a sociology major at West Point. What? A sociology major at West Point? Say it isn't so! How could you allow sociology to be studied at West Point? I mean, we've really lost our bearings, folks. What does she say? She says, "I intend for my resignation to offer a concrete example of the consequences of a failed law and social policy." Oh yeah, Catherine, get out! Just get out! She says she's going to start, she's going to enroll at Yale in September. Good, go to Yale with all the freaks and queers and deviants at Yale. You'll fit right in. Get the hell out of West Point. Thank you very much. And finally, from Miami, from Fox News, police in North Miami say a Democratic congressional candidate has been robbed at gunpoint while waiting to make a campaign appearance at a church. Marlene Bastion was in a car last Saturday with her sister outside the Church of the Living God when another car pulled up alongside. A man got out, opened the driver's door, and demanded that the women give them their purses, and he threatened to kill them. Bastion is running in a Democratic primary in a South Miami, South Florida district. And I think this is just emblematic of the amount of respect that our political appointees, our elected officials, and even candidates for office, this is pretty much what they deserve. They have sown the wind. They should reap the whirlwind. Should they not? All right, that's it. I can't take any more. I'm out of here. I'm Doug McBurney. This has been the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to encourage you to be back with us next week. I want to thank the folks at Personhood USA and at kgov.com. I want to thank Colorado Right to Life. And as always, I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.